the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Katie Lynn Parkinson, and this month, as we celebrate love in all its forms, we're shining a spotlight on the often overlooked aspect of self-love. Joining us today is the remarkable Sarah McVannell, affectionately known as the Frog Lady, and the visionary founder of Greatness Magnified. Together, we'll explore the transformative power of recognition and nurturing team cultures, combating burnout, and fostering resilience. From acknowledging compassion fatigue and caregiving perfections to prioritizing our own well-being, we're diving deep into the art of self-care and accountability. So get comfortable, settle in, and let's embark on a journey of self-discovery and growth.
So welcome, Sarah McVannell. I'm really excited to have you. It's kind of a rainy whatever morning, but this is going to be really fun.
I'm so happy to be here. And yes, you brought some sunshine to a gloomy, rainy January is when we're recording this. How is it raining in January? I'm just saying.
There's a snow go.
Yeah. I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Before we dive into those, as you would probably say them, the scrumptious, juicy, delicious questions.
Yes, they are all those things. Yes. Yeah.
We need to know, who is Sarah McVannell? So for listeners who might be new to you, or maybe there are some familiar friends, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm the Frog Lady. Frog, she's an amphibian, amphibian studier. No. So Frog stands for Forever Recognize Others' Greatness. And I am on a mission to create scrumptious, thriving cultures where everyone belongs. So the art of frogging, Forever Recognize Others' Greatness, allows us to be constantly curious out there in the world about where greatness exists in the small micro moments, the extraordinary that happens in our ordinary lives, which I know childcare educators, childcare professionals are rocking their awesome all the time. And they don't necessarily think of it that way. They think they're just, you know, doing what they do. So part of what I do in the world is I get to work with really cool humans like you, like your childcare folks who listen to this podcast, like supervisors, like executive directors in your sector and others to help bring recognition front and center. I'm also a mom of an 18 and 20-year-old. I'm also raising my 55-year-old husband who is coming along very nicely in his development. I have my own business here in Niagara called Greatness Magnified. I do salsa dancing, a little amateur hip hop. I don't know. You want to know my deepest, darkest secrets as well, or not yet?
I think we need to ease ourselves into that first.
Yeah, it's a good call. You've got good instincts there.
Yeah. Something that I've also heard you call yourself, and I had to grasp on to this term, is a process nerd, because in early learning, we often talk about kind of what you just said is slowing down, enjoying the journey, thinking about that learning that happens to get to a destination. And then I would even put a question mark after destination, because is it about the destination or is it about the journey? But I kind of want to hear, why do you call yourself that process nerd? What does that mean?
Oh, yeah. So Katie Lynn, here's another interesting aspect of my background that will make perfect sense why I call myself a process nerd. So I actually spent most of my career working in healthcare. And the last organization I was in at various levels of leadership was we were becoming a lean hospital, lean continuous improvement. So I actually have my yellow belt and my green belt in lean continuous improvement. And once you start learning about process, you can never process, depending on which side of the border you're on, you can never unlearn it. So our team, I work with an amazing, talk about scrumptious, an amazing group of women who we are obsessed with process, because it allows us to be delivering amazing, consistent service. It allows us to find ways of working with each other that taps into our strengths rather than, you know, rework and fixing things that shouldn't have to be fixed. And essentially it frees us up to do the work that we love and that we keep doing more and get better at that. So yeah, it's the concept in Lean is every day a little up.
So ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Every time we discover a problem, an issue, a challenge, it's like, ah, we lowered the waterline on something, a crack that existed. How do we look at it, address it so that, you know, whatever happens, it happens next. We find a way to improve that, improve the process. Didn't realize it needed improving. Good to know now. And then moving forward. And we have way stronger relationships because of that curiosity about what it, when something breaks, when something doesn't work out according to plan, how is that super helpful? And we get to rise that challenge together. Are you kind of thinking that's like the state of childcare right now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's that you hit a wall and you think, oh, I can't go any further. But then you have to think, well, the wall is there. So how am I going to get over it? How am I going to get around it? Mm-hmm. You can't do that by yourself. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look around. All right. Who can I pull in their strengths? Who can I pull in their ideas? How are we going to get over this? And working together, I think, as a whole field, as a profession, to kind of think about what are we going to do together to problem solve, to make things better, to uplift our profession.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that we're hesitant to look directly at those questions because we think, well, what can I do? You know, if I'm an individual contributor and you got into the profession because you love the kids, you love being able to turn them on to learning, to be able to hold that space of seeing their greatness when they're frustrated or when it's, you know, they're really going through this big learning leap and they're not, whether it be social learning or, a particular physical skill and so forth. And we, childcare professionals and educators, earlier childhood educators, what I love and respect so much about them is they are incredibly resourceful and they are incredibly good at seeing the possibilities and the potential in our little ones. So I almost feel like now, given the state of angst in the sector, this is a way of saying, actually, I do this every day. I hold the faith for really, can we just be, for those of us who are, don't have the patience of all the folks who are listening to this podcast, like I jokingly say I'm unqualified to raise my own children. I mean, I'm qualified now that they're adults. I'm very good at it now, but when they were little. So I want to say to all the people listening is you're actually incredibly resourceful at this. You are, you know, you do this every day with some of the little ones that people like me find very intimidating and hard to be patient with and find their resourcefulness. So imagine if you were able to just be curious about, if I can be this resourceful learner, experimenter, faith holder, you know, patient steward in somebody's life, their development, I wonder how I can use that mindset in the profession to hold the faith, the belief, to iterate, to try, to see this as a developmental phase in the sector.
I love that. And I have to say something, Sarah, I am not a patient person. I've been in this field and working with children 15 years, and I would never say I'm so patient. That is not a trait. And I think that there's a lot of educators who are not patient either. Okay. I think it's understanding. I can be really understanding of the situation of, you know, I see you're really frustrated. I see you're angry, or that person was having so much fun with that toy and you wanted to have fun too, so you took it from them. Well, how can we problem solve around that? How can we work together? And I think that understanding is what gives us our power. It puts on our research cap to say, well, what's going on? And one of my colleagues says, we turn our butts to so's. So we can't do that. Instead of saying, but we can't do that, we say, so we can't do that. So what are we going to do instead? And
I truly am covered in goosebumps.
Yeah.
Wow. So what's your powerful question?
Based on, what are you going to do?
Yeah. What are you going to do? So if you could position this question for folks who've been really struggling and finding this, the current state of being in the profession, being in the sector, how would you turn that juicy mindset into a core question that everybody could noodle on? My British mother says noodling is like thinking about, reflecting. Yeah. What's the question you want to ask everyone to consider, invite them to consider?
I think I would consider how you put your research cap on. If we look at our frameworks for childcare, which is how does learning happen? Children are curious, they're competent, they're rich in potential. So as educators, we're curious, we're competent, we're rich in potential. So using those skills in order to think about what are we going to do? And kind of thinking about that journey and that process, and we might not get there right away, but what is that learning that's happening along the way? Things didn't work. So I know that didn't work. Mm-hmm. What else can we try? Mm-hmm. And I think there is that persistence and that resilience in the field that I think just needs a little bit of support right now and a little mm-hmm. bit of magic dust sprinkled on it just to give a little bit of power to it. But yeah.
And I love the putting on the hat you already have. You just maybe haven't thought to put it on in this situation. It's such a resourceful lens. It's not toxic positivity, like everything's going to be all right, or, you know, just wait for a sunny day. It's not that. It's legitimately grounded in your competencies as a professional group. And it's one that you share. It creates a shared narrative about, we know how to do this. We are trained in this. We embrace this. We don't all have to have the personal attribute of patience, for example. However, everybody who's graduated with the same qualifications and who are, have a certain expectation as a professional group, have this as a professional competency. So why wouldn't it be a resiliency competency as well? So, you know, I kind of think that this is a very interesting way of framing up conversations within teams, like childcare centers, to say, okay, if we looked at what we're dealing with right now in terms of the retention or the team tension or the, you know, resource constraints that's currently happening, that's leading to some challenges. If we were to pull out one of our core skills as educators, such as our research hat, how would we look at this challenge, this issue, through that lens?
Mm-hmm. That would be a really great question to pose too, and thinking about some of those team meetings or staff meetings of, okay, so what is the issue? Let's put on our hats. Mm-hmm. Let's look at all of our resources and focus right in and say, okay, what's our plan here?
You know, and what's powerful, and to come full circle back to Frog, Forever Recognize Others' Greatness, it is all about recognizing that even when we are not feeling resourceful, we're still resourceful. Our greatness is there. We just maybe need to, you know, reorient and calibrate how we're going to fit back into that place of recognizing that we have tools or we have strategies. So it's not trying to find something that doesn't exist or being something else or focusing on what's outside of our control, or the scope is so huge it can feel very overwhelming. It's about, what do we already have within our toolkit, our individual toolkit, our shared toolkit? And then we, you know, I was speaking exactly this time last week there were many counties that came together and they did a focus for the whole day on leveraging the exponential power of recognition. So these are all supervisors, some of which it was eeny, meeny, miny, your turn. So not everybody was like, yes, I want to be that leader, that supervisor. And for other people, they said, yeah, that's something that I'd like to do. The point is, everybody's in the same boat of not one center was at full capacity of staff. All the leaders in that room were feeling like they're juggling too many hats, personally and professionally. Everyone was worried about the state of the profession, you know, so they came with a lot of heaviness. And I felt like, you know what, my job is to, just like you were talking about putting on your research hat, my job was to put on the create. I'm going to hold the space that they're creative people. I said to them at the beginning of the day, you are literally the most creative profession of anybody I have the honor of serving, from crafts to ways of teaching kids of various, circumstances to just what you're personally interested in and what you choose to do outside of work. You are so creative. So you are going to find creative ways and reignite with your creativity about how to bring that back into your workplace. So we're going to practice all kinds of different ways to leverage recognition here in this room. And then each time I'm going to debrief with you how you can use that in your center. And you know what's really cool, Katie Lynn? Mm-hmm. So many different ways of adapting what we tried in that session in their centers. And so often they thought, oh, well, we could try this in a team meeting. The word try came up over and over again. We could try this in a team meeting. We could try this at our next professional development day. I could try asking 101 that question. I could try putting up a poster board that had people, put acknowledgement of each other. I could try asking the teachers or the families to write a note of thanks to the center. The word try became the glue. A three-letter word became the glue. And it all scaffolded on, you already do this so naturally. We're not creating any, we're not fabricating anything. This is just simply creating the space for you to do what you don't normally get a chance to do because it's so chaotic. You are away from the center. You're away from the office. You're away from your duties for a short period of time. So let's not squander the opportunity to lean into your creativity. And sure enough, what emerged from that very organically is the whole three-letter word of try.
Yeah.
And that's what we ask kids to do every single day. Is just
Yeah, I love how you said that. Just a 1-3-letter word of let's just try it out and see what happens. Yeah. And if you were to support an organization who is, I think maybe my question is, I think in 2020 and 2021, we heard pivot. That was the word.
Oh, yes.
Pivot was everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
And now we're hearing burnout.
Yes.
Everywhere. And I think they have to be interlinked, that it's too coincidental. It has to be. So for centers and educators who are saying, I'm really burnt out and I can't try because I'm exhausted. I'm so tired. I go into work every day and I just don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Where would you suggest they start in that recognition or in that support for their staff? Like that one little step.
I love that. Okay. So from the recognition, if it's okay with you, I'd like to answer it in two ways. One is a recognition expert and the other one as a woman with ovaries. Is that okay?
We yeah, break it absolutely. Down.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So here's my expert answer. Self-recognition and team recognition. Recognition is the glue, the foundational glue in which everything connective is built. There is not one person that doesn't need to matter to somebody else. And therefore recognition is the bond. It's the glue that does that. So if you're personally struggling, self-recognition, I actually do this exercise where I have people create their greatness business card, identify at least 5 aspects of your greatness, write it down and keep it somewhere you can see. And then when you're having those moments where you think, oh my God, I can't get through the rest of the shift, or I'm so unhappy, look at that list and ask yourself, is there something on this list that I am not experiencing or doing in my work today? And inevitably there will be, due to no fault of their own. However, this is your way back to your meaning and purpose and achievement. And when we focus on that, the shift comes off of burnout to filling ourself up again. So that's one thing. Have a professional business card. And that's actually a self-recognition strategy. So when it comes to the team recognition, because the whole team's burning out, I do actually have on my website, greatnessmagnified.com, a compassion satisfaction, a compassion fatigue checklist. So sometimes if it's very serious, they may actually just need to do a gauge about how compassion fatigued folks are to just as a baseline. I don't think necessarily people need to do that. It's a really important thing to do if folks haven't explored that concept. But here's the thing. Say thank you more often. Thank people at the risk of it being too much. Thank people. So, you know, thank each other. Thanks at the end of the shift. One of the things that somebody said last week, which I thought was so great, is at the end of the shift, people send texts to each other, even though they're physically there. Thank you for helping me through this shift. Thank you for your smile. Thank you for just showing up today. And they'll do that. That's become a habit where they do an end of shift. Thank you. You know, text ping, beep, 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 ping. So thank you. Gratitude. So that's when people are burnt out, have a self-recognition mechanism, business cards, one, there's many others, and then team recognition.
Yeah.
My website has tons of those ideas if people want them.
Now, we've used your checklist in some training before. And often people are saying, well, how does this loop into like challenging behaviors or burnout or whatever is happening in the classroom? We always say, you need to go back to yourself and fill your cup or fill your well to fill the pitcher, to fill the cup. So if you're not taking care of yourself, how are you going to take care of others? You can't fill from an empty well. So exactly. I absolutely will link your website into those show notes as well. So anyone who wants to find that can go and take a look for themselves.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And what's powerful about that is what gets named gets claimed. So like if you're burnt out, if you are compassion fatigued, I actually think compassion fatigue is an important concept that we don't talk enough about in the caring professions. We talk a lot about the word burnout, and there's two different dimensions of it. Let me give the Coles notes. And then I don't want to get too, waylaid from the core question you asked. So I hope you don't mind. I'll take a little side note, footnote in the
side trail, but footnote. We'll loop back.
yeah, that's right. Compassion. So burnout is the natural exhaustion that happens from doing the work. You know, this is not the official definition, but Coles Notes version. Compassion fatigue is the vicarious or lived trauma from doing the work. So think about the potential trauma or vicarious trauma that people experienced during COVID. Kids not being able to see their parents and say goodbye properly, and them having to deal with total meltdowns because the parents couldn't come in and do a proper goodbye. When you love those kids like they're your own and deeply are connected, like I'm actually getting choked up thinking about it, how hard that might be a childcare professional's version of trauma. And you saw that day after day after day with your face shield, unable to hug the kids, that then made it worse. So know that part of the understanding compassion fatigue and how that's impacting you and each other, you might have shared scars. And that's just one example of many. People lost parents or, kids got super sick because of COVID. Some of your closest colleagues, they felt awful and they left the profession. That could be its own version of trauma, right? So at the risk of sounding too pop psychology, I want to just say there's a huge science behind this literature. We'll put on a research hat and say, if you think there might be something to that, just Google compassion fatigue and you'll see so many really great in articles about interpreting the scientific and the more clinical content in a very digestible, helpful, understandable way. And I've written a little bit about it on my website. We have that tool. So I do want to also acknowledge that burnout and compassion fatigue, we have to also look at the root issues. And if that's the root of people's strain in their center, we like, you know, we can try to do fun activities and things, but, you know, to try to kind of build team camaraderie, and we can, you know, try to fill the positions and all of those things. But if at the root of it, if there's some really painful stuff, we need to sit and look at that, stare that in the eye and say, okay, what gets named gets claimed. We need to claim the fact that we are currently in a compassion fatigue situation. Now we got to build our way back from that. And that is actually, Katie Lynn, that's a shared experience. So ironically, the fact that we're in this shared state of compassion fatigue or burnout, could be one or the other or both, that actually can be very connective, as opposed to not naming it and not claiming it and us think about it's a problem with each other. Mm. So there's power in acknowledging the pain or the strain. So thank you for letting me go on that side note. Yeah. Is that okay? That any follow-up questions before I go back to the answering as a woman?
We'll answer as a woman first, because I think we'll probably go off on a whole trail and we'll forget.
Yeah. Okay, really quickly. I wrote an article at the end of last year called Self-Care or Self-Neglect. And what I've been seeing, because I do a lot of work, childcare, healthcare, developmental services, and other frontline, front caring fields. And we talk a lot about we should practice self-care. And you and I both know anytime you say should, it's like waving a finger at somebody, like shaming people by not doing self-care. That's not helpful. So the concept that I offer people is, what if in fact it was self-neglect? Would you ever neglect the kids, the families, your own children, you know, your partner? If we put ourselves at the bottom of the list, that's actually a form of neglect. So it's not from a place of guilt. It's not you should, it's that you would never treat somebody else that way. So I invite people to think about how then they won't treat themselves that way. And we have over 50 ways in which people can practice self-care. And now I actually do this when I have the privilege of doing longer form program with people. There's over 50 of them. I'll read three at a time and I'll say, on that part of the room, one side of the room is the first idea. In the middle of the room is that idea. On that side of the room, there's that idea. Stand in relation to which option you prefer. And I will read three at a time. And they'll pick one. I'm like, great, here's the next one. So we'll do them in blocks of three. Sometimes it's like, but I want to do two of them. Which one do I pick? I'm like, isn't that a great problem to have? Is you want to practice both of those. So stand in the middle, pick one, whatever you want to do. So at the end of that, people have identified over 10 ways, something like, I don't know, about 12, 13 ways that they need, they desire to practice self-care. So I'll say, isn't it good to know? You only need to choose which one of those that you're going to practice tonight.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then people don't say, but I don't have time, or, you know, I have too many things to do. That's what we do for kids, right? We don't say, would you like to eat vegetables? We say, would you like to eat your broccoli first or your carrots first? So I say, rather than do you practice self-care or not, and you should be practicing it, it's more like, okay, so here's your menu. Which one would you like to do now? And it's from this place of, if you know, and you just mentioned it, if we don't do something for ourselves, how are we ever going to be able to do something for somebody else? Mm-hmm. So I invite people to think about, and this is, as I say, as a woman, because we, you know, and this is not just a gender thing. This is all, you know, all folks. We get a chance to think about, what does true care for self look like? And how does care for self allow us to not just care for others? It literally allows us to physically be healthier and stay on this earth longer. Our choice now leads to our longevity, our mobility, our well-being, our mental health, our capacity to stay in the profession longer, to not have to take early retirement, retrain somewhere else. It's actually, when you look at it that way, it's the least selfish thing that you could do by practicing even just one form of self-care.
And I think that leads into that retention too, that if you are healthier and happier and fulfilled in yourself, it overflows your cup and you can start filling other people's cups up as well and will lead you to be in the field for longer.
And hopefully other advocate.
People will
see you. Yeah.
Pardon?
I was just going to say, you might even advocate for other people to do it too. So they stay in the field, you know, like you start practicing self-care in a way that gives you joy, meaning not like, oh, I should go to the gym. If you don't want to go to the gym and you like walking, go for walks. If you don't like going for walking, you like stretching, that still counts. And then you're like, oh, I feel so much better. Now I stretch every day for 15 minutes. What do you do to make yourself feel good? And then they might be able to stay in the profession longer. You know, it's like, it's this self-care ripple effect that gets created.
One comment we do get really often when we talk about self-care is that time. So that seems to be that wall, that but we don't have time. What would you say to switch that but you don't have time, so you're short on time? What are some of those maybe top three suggestions or pieces of advice you would give to someone with that barrier?
Great question. I'm so glad we're talking about the barriers to it and acknowledging that. So three ideas. Number one, somebody who you want to advocate for to take care of themselves, form an accountability partnership. In other words, I care about you, Katie Lynn. So I'm going to go all in for you and you can go all in for me. And so we're going to do this together.
Mm.
And you can start from not like, I need you to help. Well, you can do that. I need you to help me, hold me accountable. So let's do this together. But given how much this sector, the people listening to this podcast, it's all about other people. Well, then start with that orientation. Who's the person that you need to practice self-care? They deserve it. They literally need you for their mental health, their physical health, you know, staying in the profession, whatever that is. So do it for them. And then you're going to do it for yourself. So that's one. It's the first idea. Second idea is what do you need to role model for that you need to do it first so that somebody else will do it next. And it might be an early childhood educator who just are starting in the profession and you need to role model when you have your own kids at home and a mortgage and all the things, all the adulting things that are on your shoulders and they don't quite have all those things. How are you going to role model that you've got enough of your own stuff together and you could still take care of yourself so that they don't look into their version of the future and go, I don't know if I want that, right?
Yeah.
Be the person that you want them to aspire to be, not because you're trying to put yourself on a pedestal, but because you're trying to make them have an aspiration to stay in the field. So that's one. That's another one. The third one is to ask yourself, if I found out tomorrow that I had a diagnosis, depression, multiple sclerosis, cancer, what would I have wished I did today? You know, like what would I have wished I had done this whole time? Because if we got a diagnosis like that, we would find the time. And I will tell you, somebody very, very close to me had a diagnosis, younger than me, had a diagnosis. That put things into perspective because this person cannot do some of the things that she used to be able to do, cannot do some of the things that I am very, very able to do. So when I don't feel like going for a walk because I am tired and I've had a long day, and this person could not at 5 o'clock at night go for a walk because they literally, their body will not be able to do that, then I better get my own running shoes on and walk for both of us because she would love to switch places and be the one to put on those laces. So whether it be dedicating it from a health and wellness, mental health, physical health and wellness standpoint just for somebody else who can't, again, that's that place of caring for others mentality that folks listening to this podcast naturally have. It might also be just the reality check that, well, I won't always be as healthy as I am now. So how do I do it for my future self? My favorite phrase, my husband's and my favorite phrase when it comes to exercise is motion is lotion. He's 55. I'm almost 48. And it's true. If I don't move today, I'll have a harder time moving tomorrow. No, your folks are constantly moving because they have the type of work that they do. And also it's the moving for themselves as well, right? They're always moving for the kids. But what does your body need you to move differently for you to have, let's say, not have musculoskeletal injuries, not have back pain, not have foot, you know, bunions on your foot or whatever that thing is that can sometimes be a fallout for the type of mobility. So it's, those are three ideas. I hope that answers
your
question.
No, those are great ideas.
Yeah. Good.
And it reminds me too of, we are role modeling for so many people and little people too.
Yes.
So we are their role models. They're going to see how we take care of ourselves and how we're mindful in our practice, and they'll be able to look to us to say, you know what, when I'm feeling overwhelmed, here's what I can do. And they'll have those tools as they grow up. So it's really important.
You made me think of a fourth one when you said that. May I share the fourth one that just inspired? You just
yes,
inspired.
Yes, please.
They are our emotional barometers. They can sometimes tell in us before we know that we need to take care of ourselves. So have you ever had a child crawl into your lap or ask you, are you okay? Or you look sad today? Or maybe you should lay down for nap time with us. That's their way of their own unfiltered, thank God for that, you know, most of the time, right? That unfiltered way that they have. They're telling you sometimes before you know yourself that you need to take some time. So maybe let them, because you're right. You need to be the role model to them. And then they're also the input for you. If you haven't noticed or you haven't felt like I can't take the time, maybe they're telling you, I think you need to take the time.
Yeah. And that's the acronym, I guess, for time too, that popped into my head is take individual moments every day. So if you don't have the time, find those individual moments. And it could be that 5 minutes that you talked about just to take a breath. And I never regret getting outside and going for a walk or going for a run, but I do regret when I don't. And I think, yes, oh, should have done that. So getting ahead of it and just motivating yourself.
Or that having old adage a partner of we
to
never...
say, I need you to motivate me.
Yeah. 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 We regret the things we don't do, not always what the things that we do, right? Yeah. So yeah. And because so we often also too have this bias for action in our society. And because we have so many things, we build habitual responses to being productive, getting things done, go, go, go. How many people in Western society are saying, oh, what a wonderful, successful weekend it sounded like, where you just read a book and got a massage and went to a yoga class. What a successful, accomplished weekend you had.
I love that.
Wouldn't that be great?
Like, that would be amazing.
Let's make that. Okay, so here I have an idea, Katie Lynn.
Okay, let's hear it.
You know, we talk about role modeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I should set a goal that on Monday morning, we are going to celebrate with our colleagues. We had a weekend of restoration. We didn't do all the things on the to-do list. We didn't clean out the closet. Yeah, we did the laundry. However, we did not do any ironing. We made some healthy food. We went for a walk. We called our grandma. We did, but unless we didn't like to, if grandma's not nice, we didn't call grandma. We did all the things that filled our soul. What do you think? Like, are you with me?
You know what I actually have planned for this weekend is to go for a walk. I've been doing the Bruce Trail end to end. So I have my end to end piece that I'm doing on the weekend. I'm going to go visit my grandma. I'm not going to do laundry because I don't like it.
Yes.
And I'm only going to order in food. So nice. I will accept that challenge and I will touch base with you to see how successful your weekend was too.
I will challenge every listener
to do that. And I want everyone to chime in and let us know how it went.
Wouldn't that be cool if, and like, do you have comments in your, where people can type it in below?
Yeah.
Let's invite people to type in all the things that they did when they took up that weekend challenge. And at the end of, like, if you're willing to do this, Katie Lynn, let's do a raffle of anyone. Actually, you know what? Every person who takes this challenge and writes their list at the bottom and they put their name attached to it, I'm going to give them a workbook. I'm going to give them something. I'm going to give them a gift. It's a coloring book / self-reflection questions. It's like this cool thing I developed with my mom. It is called a Zentention booklet. That's what we're going to do. Anyone who takes this challenge and in the comment below this podcast types in all the things that they did on their weekend that was all about self-care, zero judgments, if it's 3 things or 333 things. Yeah. You get a workbook. You just need to send a message to ECCDC with your mailing address so that I can know where to send this book. What do you think? Should we do that?
You're on. Done. Accountability. Done. Here we come.
Here we come. Here we come. I'm excited. And in the meantime, I'm looking forward to my weekend and I'll be thinking about you all weekend.
My weekend starts on Sunday, but Sunday, Monday is going to be my weekend. Tuesday, I'm going to connect back.
Nice. Nice. Super pumped for this. Super. I actually have a massage after work tonight. So mine starts tonight.
Look at us go.
Look at us. I'm already thinking about how yummy this weekend's going to be. It's so great.
I know. Yeah. I love the little like segue we went into, but just thinking about coming back to that recognition. If you were to build a culture of recognition, and I've been doing a lot of thought about what does culture mean when it comes to childcare? How do we build a culture? What does that look like from even onboarding the second you walk in the doors? What are some pieces that come to mind or some suggestions or advice that you would give to someone who wants to start creating that culture within their program?
Yeah. So much of what we've talked about is already, you know, doing that. Yeah. I will take a step back and say, what do we mean by culture? And here's my definition. There's many definitions out there. Culture is the way in which we describe how we do things around here. So the fastest way to gauge what culture is in your center is what do people say is how we do things around here. And you can also start, you know, rebuilding or rejigging and recrafting and building by design rather than default what you want your culture to be by saying, so if we fast forward 1 year from now, what will we be saying our culture is? What will we be saying we do around here? And no doubt, one of those things will be recognition. We express gratitude. We thank each other. We express appreciation for the big and the small things. We will focus on what's possible. We will become solution curious versus problem centric. We will look for potent possibilities versus complain. We will be kind to each other and resource gossip versus negative gossip. In other words, we'll say positive things about each other behind our backs. We will encourage families and kids to say nice things about us and to us and about each other. So culture by design rather than default is one where you're putting some design behind it. And so, you know, again, one of the tools on my website is a stay interview question. It's just actually 25 questions. Mm-hmm. So you could start by using that. Like if you really felt like you were completely having to rebuild from the ashes, use those stay interview questions, start a team meeting or at the start of the day or one-on-one conversations and ask something like, why did you choose to get into the profession? What gives it meaning and spirit for you? And what's something that happened that was really great this week? Or what's the best compliment you could ever receive? And that gives your roadmap of what success looks like to individuals and also collectively, because there are themes. There are ideas that come out of that curiosity. And really what I help so many of my clients to do now, and I'm doing this work, we are doing people planning very differently now. At least I do it differently, and I'm imploring my HR colleagues out there in the world to do it differently. And that is employee experience mapping. You alluded to this earlier. So let's look at pre-hire right through to post-retire, because we know people are coming in and picking up shifts or taking on projects, you know, even if it's for the ministry, it may not be in the center, but, you know, so we have this 10 phase employee experience journey now. So how do we build inclusive, collaborative spaces of belonging and connection at every point? So even before somebody chooses the center, they feel like they matter. It's not transactional. They're not like, don't call us, we'll call you. That whole thing only worked. Not that we should have ever done it. It only worked when we had too many applicants. We don't have too many applicants. So we need to express gratitude and recognition for the effort of even considering working in the field for our organization. So here's a little tip that I give people. If you want to practice recognition in a big way, use recognition notes at every phase of the employee experience journey. So when somebody applies to you, write a thank you note. It can be one sentence. It doesn't have to take long. How many childcare centers are writing a thank you note for applying?
Probably not many.
And that's true of any industry. It's not just childcare. Yeah. It's any industry, right? And then similarly at the, at the phase of vetting, right? You're looking at the application and you're doing a pre-screening, write a thank you note. The screener writes a thank you note. When you do the interview, write a thank you note. And each time you learn something new about the person, acknowledge that. You sound like a really passionate, curious, creative person, Katie Lynn. I really appreciate our conversation. Thank you for taking 45 minutes with me. Or thank you for taking half an hour longer than our scheduled time. You're paying attention to the person and you're valuing their time. And time is the only thing we can, no matter who you are, you don't get more of. So expressing gratitude to that person, not they're lucky to work for us. Frankly, we're in the business of hiring people, not earning them. Earning people, not hiring them. So we earn their enthusiasm and their excitement to come and work for us. So part of what do people think about culture in your culture, in your organization? If they've been thanked by simply considering and going through the recruitment process with you, and then they get to the center and you have a staff kudos board and you do gratitude, at circle time and at for annual service, not just the 20-year employees, everybody gets a card. And ECE week, early childhood, childhood educator week, you do something special, not just like tokenism, but truly something special. Like you ask all the parents on the QT, hey guys, could you each, make a cookie, just one, and bring it in? And by the way, I need somebody to volunteer to do the gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free version, because we have one of our, staff. That's special. And it doesn't take that much work, but that's a culture by design. And that is because there's intention and effort behind it. People feel so grounded and grateful. And then they're willing to take the effort and they create the next recognition ripple effect, peer to peer, to the kids, to the sector and so forth. So it's actually not, I'm happy to say, and I'll say this as somebody who has had big jobs with multifaceted teams that I've had to manage. Anytime I thought I didn't have time to recognize, but I took the time, it always paid back exponentially in time, because people gave me more discretionary effort. They gave me energy and financial saving ideas. They found the next person when I had a job vacancy, because they're like, you have to come and work in this team. You have to come and work in this organization. It will pay back. Your effort will pay back exponentially when you do any culture building activities.
I think that's a really great point. And I think that's that link back, kind of taking us full circle to that very beginning of that process of enjoying your time to get there, really appreciating those little moments and getting to know each other. And it's a really great theme that I'm hearing through our conversations as educators. They think about well-being, engagement, belonging, and expression for children. I'm hearing that's really what we need to think about, and how are we supporting those things as a work culture, as educators for ourselves, and having that intentionality behind that creation as well.
So, what a scrumptious exercise you just created. I don't know if you knew you just created an exercise. Here's the exercise I just heard you create. And that is, what do we intentionally build for our kids and in our, this learning environment? What is it? Okay. Yep. What are the things you just listed?
Well-being, engagement, belonging, and expression. I call them the weebies.
Yeah, the weebies.
Help me remember.
Yeah, weebies. So what does, okay, so here's our weebies. What does that look like for us? What are we currently doing? What could we be doing? Yep. So take that as your roadmap. Again, remember we talked earlier and you were vibing with it, where we're talking about when we focus on the skills and the competencies and the practices we do every day for, as a professional group, for the kids, or, and, you know, again, curriculum building and so forth. And then we just turn that inwards and go, okay, so what is that? What is WeBe going to look like as a team,
yeah,
as a center, as a recruitment strategy? What does that look like? And it's an easy conversation. It's like not building it from the ashes anymore. It's scaffolding it on top of programming and, you know, it practices with the kids and, you know, what you say to parents and prospective people choose who were considering the childcare center, you know, you could say like, look at this center brochure. If this brochure all of a sudden magically overnight were a recruitment brochure, what might need to be tweaked a little bit so that it was clear to the audience of the prospective applicant that they want to work here? Like, you probably have a brochure like that already. Why not turn it, why not, you know, kind of reflect on it, on how that's actually also like, not just to get new folks understanding about and choosing your center as a family, what might we say for an applicant?
And you already have a really interesting conversation. I think we've started something.
I know we've started something.
I think you and I could probably keep talking and spin off for a while, but I did want to respect your time. I know we had this time booked here, but was there anything else that you wanted to share that you were really hoping to say to our listeners of the early learning field before we kind of wrapped things up together?
I want to say thank you. My children were the fortunate recipients of your education and your competencies and frankly your love and heart from the time they were 10 months old. And I literally got through postpartum depression with my second child by having my early childhood licensed home daycare provider still take my son 3 days a week. Like, she literally, I think, was my first therapist. She didn't actually give therapy, but I just mean like by filling a need that I had. So I am deeply grateful. My children are better off because of it. I mean, my daughter got her start in French. We didn't speak French at home. We wanted the kids to be able to speak French. She is now fluent in French because of the early childhood environment that she was in from the time she was 27 months. So you've literally made our family exponentially better. And that will, how many professionals could I say that our family's worked with that has made it forevermore exponentially better individually and collectively? So please hear me say that on behalf of all the families and all the children that you have served in your life in whatever capacity that has been, hugely grateful. And I am so, so grateful that we have put a greater value on early childhood education by making it available and accessible on a much bigger scale. And I'm sorry that that's creating deep pressure and strain on you in the system. And because you're so amazing, that's why we have this. So we will get through this. Canadians are behind you. And we appreciate you. And thank you for choosing to do what you do.
Oh, I felt that right deep down in my chest. Those are powerful. Those are powerful ending words. Oh, thank you so much for those words and for all of your advice and your strategies and your suggestions. I know this has been a really big highlight of my week sitting here and sharing it with you. I've had this big smile, my cheeks hurt. And I'm looking forward to hearing about the challenge of everyone's weekend and continuing this conversation after we kind of log off and reconnecting soon. I know we'll have you back in Niagara and speaking to those educators.
Ugh,
so thank you so
cannot
much.
Wait. Yes. Thank you.
And that wraps up another ECCDC podcast. We hope you found inspiration in our conversation with Sarah McBannell and that you're feeling empowered to prioritize self-love and recognition in your own life. Remember, self-care isn't selfish, it's essential. Whether it's carving out moments of restoration or holding ourselves accountable to our well-being goals, let's continue to support each other on this journey. We'd love to hear from you. Comment below, how did you show up for yourself this weekend? Share your experiences with us and let's keep this conversation going. Until next time, take care, stay kind to yourself, and keep spreading the love.